Jennifer Cahill, author of One, is my guest on The Versatile Writer. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hello, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm super excited.
Excellent. That's great stuff. First of all, tell me how you were first drawn to creative writing.
To be honest, I think it was always in me. I think a lot of writers say that. It was sort of in me. And my mum said when I was a little girl, like, I was always writing stuff down. And they didn't really notice until I sort of later in life started actually writing books. My mum was like, how did we not see this before? Because as a writer, I have a lot of varied interests. And you'll find that. I know you're a writer yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I speak a few languages. I like to travel. I'm always poking around with stuff. And I think as a writer, you have to. So I think the fact that I'm a writer, they missed it because I was speaking various languages, I was in business school, yada, yada, yada. What really proper fascinated for me, though, was I love Spanish. I'd like to say it's my second language, but I'm not, you know, I didn't have Spanish. I have one Spanish parent or anything. It's just I absolutely love the language and I like the richness of it. And I love literature in Spanish and I do have a BA in Spanish. And that's where the writing really came out, because obviously, a language BA is the same as doing an English BA. You're just doing it in Spanish. So that's where the writing really came to the fore. And not only was I was writing in Spanish, basically. So that, and I always saw it as just kind of a hobby. And then when I started writing One, which was a confluence of events happened that I started writing the book, which maybe we can talk about later. I was like, how did I never see this before? I never planned to write a book. It sort of just happened. But I've always had a love of writing, and you'll always see me with a pen in my hand writing stuff down all the time. Even in the middle of walking the dog, I'll stop and go, oh, that's something for a character, and write it down.
You're saying about the walking around with a pen in your hand. I've actually got a pen in my hand at the moment. I think it's impossible for me to speak about writing unless I've got a pen in my hand. It's just bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And also, I think, because everything's digital these days, I think it's really important to still have that physical pen. I have a blank sheet of paper with some notes on it. I have a pen in my hand at the moment. It's literally impossible for me to talk about writing without having something to write with in my hand. So, yes, I totally agree with you on that.
I do love that idea, actually, because as writers, we need to get our whatever's going on in our head down onto paper, or some people just straight onto the screen. But for me, similarly to you, it has to be straight onto paper to just empty my head so I can work out where it's going, what it's doing, what shape it'll be.
Yes, I agree. Absolutely.
How did you know it was fiction and not non-fiction that held your attention?
I think there's more dexterity in fiction. I can absolutely write non-fiction, and maybe I will at some point, but I think I definitely have what's called a secondary imagination. So I can be talking to you right now, and then there's kind of plot lines and characters rumbling around in the background to my brain somewhere. The book happened, to be honest with you. I had a confluence of events. I was on a project in Germany. This was not that long ago, but it was before Wi-Fi and FaceTime and everything. And I work as a management consultant, so I was actually in Germany on my own, which was a little dismal back then. These days, you know, you're on FaceTime with your friends when you're bored, it doesn't really matter. I bought a book in the airport on my way, you know, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up on my own. A couple of the colleagues weren't there that week for some reason. I thought, I'm literally going to go mad in this hotel room. It was kind of rural Germany. It wasn't even Munich or anything. And, you know, it wasn't a city where you can kind of amuse yourself. And I thought, I'm literally going to go mad here. So I got the book out, flew through the book, put the book down and just went, I could have written better than that. The book wasn't very good, by the way. And I just literally marched over to the laptop and started writing. It was quite an extraordinary experience, completely on my own. And I thought, I could write better than that. And I literally did. I just started writing. So for once in my life, I didn't overthink something. I just literally got up and did it. And all of a sudden, life turned into kind of a technicolor experience. It was a bit sort of black and white before, because everything I experienced and saw could be a potential character, a twist, a plot line, and that kind of thing. So that's how I knew fiction was for me. It kind of happened, but I really do think it was always inside me. And I think that my love of fiction, and particularly, you know, Latin American fiction with that, the beauty, the wealth of the language, and that kind of thing really sort of brought that out. And then sort of a confluence of events happened to get me writing, basically.
I love the Technicolor aspect to it. I think that's really, well, it opens up so much, actually, just in that sentence alone.
I agree. I mean, that's how I would describe it. Life wasn't particularly boring, but there was just something missing. And the minute I started writing, it was like life went from black and white to Technicolor, and I've never looked back since, basically. And it's that secondary imagination that I talk about. It's basically, we all have an imagination, everyone does, but writers in particular, and I know you will understand this better than anyone else, we have this secondary imagination. So, you know, you kind of have your normal life, and then you have this world of the fiction of, in my first book, for example, Penelope, Alix, Sarah, they're almost as real to me as and my family actually, I talk about them as if they're real. They're all super excited about the book, you know, which is great. But it's that secondary imagination, and that's the Technicolor aspect of life, of my life anyway. And I think as a writer, you need that, because if you're not right, if you're a writer who's not writing, there's something definitely missing in your life.
That's a signal that there's something going on in my head that's going into maybe a darkness that needs to be pulled back from. Yeah, we will get onto your books in a moment. I just want to ask you, first of all, what drew you to write the genre you write in?
Again, it sort of happened. So I wrote the book and then started speaking to people in publishing, and they tell me what genre it was. I know that sounds ridiculous. I mean, if I planned, and I do love to write magic realism, and I probably can, but I don't think that's the genre for me. I think I'm quite curious. I pick up on things around me, and I kind of try to capture the essence of a place and time. So with that writer's view on the world, I'll probably notice things that just a non-writer wouldn't notice.
Right, so tell me about One.
One, very bold title altogether. Mm. I never in a million years would have cooked that title up if I was sitting there brainstorming. It literally came to me, you all know this experience, Sarah, just as I was falling asleep, so you're all coming to my head, ready to nod off, and then poof, like lightning strikes. And because of the way the title came to me, I knew it was the title. It wasn't, should I call it this, should I call it that? Now, at the time, it was just one book, so I thought, oh, it's one, yes, it's about finding the one. But then as I got into writing, I'm like, I'm going to need a bigger book. It's bizarre, because I never planned it in advance, but the trilogy flows. So One is about the traditional models of relationship, abdication of the self on the part of the female. Two is about the more modern model, so two distinct, you know, kind of people in a relationship with a lot of independence, and I'm looking at, does that work? How does it work? I know these sound kind of very like, you know, this sounds like nonfiction, but what I do is I construct this in a fictional sense. So I want people to sort of read the books and go, oh yeah, I went out with someone like that, or is that working? Why is it not working? Because of course, in relationships, and particularly in love, there is no one size fits all. So I'm trying to give scenarios in the books, and hopefully people will relate to. I have two very different female characters, Zara and Penelope, and people equally like one or the other. It's great. So there's people are relating to the different to the different characters. But and then so the titles then do follow. So One is about the traditional model of relationship and testing it in the modern world. Two is the modern model, and three, well, you just have to wait and see what three is about. But it was really interesting, because that lightning bolt of that title, it's totally appropriate, and it's very bold, and it's very bold for a debut, definitely. It's a number, it's a sentence, it's a question, and it's pretty bold.
So, I thought we were going to get an exclusive then.
I never would have had I don't think I would have had the confidence to come up with that, you know, so, you know, but because of the way it came to me, I was like, I have to honour this, I have to honour the stuff that come, you know, the inspiration that comes through, and that was definitely something I had to honour.
It sounds wonderful. I must ask you though, I mean, what do you think when the three are sitting together on a shelf, how's that going to make you feel?
I think it's going to make me feel amazing. I think I really like the cover, and I know we shouldn't judge a book by the cover, and this is what my publisher said to me. So he said, well, the thing is, you shouldn't judge a book by the cover, but people do judge by the cover.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. So I think they're going to look fabulous. I think, I don't know if you have a physical copy of the book, but I mean, it feels nice. It's very high quality paper. So I think while I'm more interested in people actually reading it and what's inside the book, I think they're going to look pretty nice on a shelf,
mm-hmm.
which unfortunately these days it does matter. Everyone's got, you know, a high quality images of everything. I think I'm hopefully going to feel like a job well done. I will have by then quite a big or, you know, dedicated kind of base of readers, which is building up at the moment. I've been loving connecting with bloggers who've been reviewing the book. That's been one of my favorite parts of bringing the book out. So I mean, I can't predict completely how I'll feel. We'll have to see how it goes, but that's the aspirational, to just feel like a job well done, to have I wouldn't say a fan, but a reader base, if that's even a word, and to have good relationships with some of the bloggers that I'm already talking to and more who will come.
When you begin writing a story, this is any story, but you can include one in that too. But when you begin writing a story, do you automatically know you'll publish it?
That's a really interesting question.
Thank you.
That's a really interesting question. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, the first book just happened, and then it was a full manuscript by the time I gave it to the publisher. So it was a bit like, well, I don't think you should sit around on a full manuscript. I have a couple of things in development, but I kind of test a few things, and then whichever one flies, I think. I would hope I publish most of the ones that I get full into, but I think anything that's just kind of an idea or, you know, I'll put it on ice and then run with some of the more chunky stuff. I mean, I think trying to complete a trilogy is challenging enough, so I'll definitely be mainly focusing on that, I think, for the foreseeable. So in which case, absolutely, because I can't leave people just with one. They need two and three to get the full picture of things, basically.
Yeah, people aren't going to want to just say it. But they need more, they need more.
They do, yeah. Well, I've had consistent feedback on one that one of the characters, Charlie, he's great. He's a wannabe rock star, trustafarian, lucky enough to have a trust fund. And a lot of the feedback from readers have been, we love him. Why wasn't there more of him in one? Well, there's more of him in two. So, and there's a specific reason why certain characters are more prominent in one and others potentially are more prominent in two and so on. So yeah, I just have to keep going with the trilogy, basically.
Gosh. It's actually good fun, though, because when you take a character out of one book and then it's the next story is about them, presumably that's what this one is. You know, there's so much more exciting because you've got the same characters that you're playing around with and a story, but you're also focusing on a different personality, aren't you?
Yeah, it's almost like having a spotlight on one or two characters in the first book, and then more of a spotlight on others in the second book. The first book was about getting to know all the characters a bit, and that's what apparently you're supposed to do in a trilogy. I didn't know that. I just wrote it as it was, as I felt.
Mm-hmm.
I should be writing it. So it's quite a busy book and with a lot of internal sort of thought processes and stuff like that. So because I wanted the readers to get to know the characters really quick to then get on with the action in the rest of the trilogy.
What are your ultimate hopes for one?
The ultimate hope, I'd love to see it adapted for screen. I've had this feedback from people as well. So I was so busy trying to write it and get it published and so on. I wasn't thinking that far ahead, but I think it is quite a visual book, and I think that it would be fantastic adapted to screen. A lot of people have been comparing it to Friends, actually, which I initially thought they were just being nice because I was a debut, and everyone knows how hard it is to be a debut author today in today's sort of world of social media and so on. But so that was really interesting. When that started happening, I thought that's really interesting because it would be a fantastic sort of TV series, or I don't know if Netflix would do it, but given sort of the busyness and the activity, and the first book is retro, so the first book starts about 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
So that would be really interesting because I think people are getting to the point now in life where we're absolutely overwhelmed with technology, constant technology change, and no one has time to sort of sit back and think, hold on, are we heading down the wrong track here? You know, particularly with this ghosting and all the dating's gone nuts, you know, like online profiles and fake profiles and influencers. Like, no one is sitting back and thinking, hold on, are we actually relating to each other anymore? Are we actually speaking to real people here? So I think it's really interesting to take a step back in time and look at that. And I think also, bizarrely, the book starts just when Friends, the TV show, ended. I mean, I couldn't have planned that better. So that might be... I know, honestly, I'm thinking about going, God, this is divine guidance. I don't know what's going on. Because it starts mid-2000s, which is just when Friends ended. So that would be a nice continuation of that time. It isn't Friends. I mean, Friends was absolutely amazing, and it's in New York and so on. But it could sort of be a London version, because Friends was contemporary fiction and sort of sitcom. And I think some of the things that happen in the book are quite funny as well. So that would be the ultimate aim. But
what's next for Jennifer Cahill?
Oh my goodness. So next is two. So two is 80% written. That will be coming out next year. I'm not sure when yet, but I really wanted to come out in 2020 because it's called two. So how crazy would that be?
Yes, of course.
I've also started it's a trilogy, unfortunately, again. So I'm starting to think I'm actually a trilogy writer. I've started a book on Notting Hill, which is my sort of point of view is I write about life, love, and London, and any combination of those three. So where 1, 2, 3 is about life, love, and London, the Notting Hill books are just about life and London, definitely not about love, which is interesting because I am a contemporary fiction writer, and it's important not to be pigeonholed into just, say, the relationship genre, because relationships are a part of contemporary life, but there's also a lot of other stuff going on as well. So that's what's next.
Thank you so much for joining me on The Versatile Writer today.
Thanks so much, Sarah. It's been fab talking to you, and it's lovely talking to what I would consider to be sort of a kindred spirit in this respect in terms of writing.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Jennifer.